Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Jesus entered the temple area and proceeded to drive out those who were selling things, saying to them, "It is written, 'My house shall be a house of prayer,' but you have made it a den of thieves." And every day he was teaching in the temple area. The chief priests, the scribes, and the leaders of the people, meanwhile, were seeking to put him to death, but they could find no way to accomplish their purpose because all the people were hanging on his words. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
For 7 years, I had the joy of being pastor of St. Anthony of Padua Parish in New Bedford, which I said from the time I was a seminarian was the most beautiful church in New England. It had been designed by the same architect who designed St. Joseph's Oratory in Toronto. The interior was all done by this famous Italian, Giovanni Castagnoli. And then all the decoration, an incredible Italian who had gone to French-speaking Canada, Guido Nincheri. Not going to give you all the details, but one of the things that he did in that church was he put these rondi with Eucharistic images all throughout the sanctuary and with aspects of the life of St. Anthony throughout the nave. You'd see the Ark of the Covenant. You'd see the grain and the grapes. You'd see the pelican. You'd see so many of the images that pointed to the Eucharist. As you were leaving the two main exits, on one side you saw a monstrance. Whenever I would give tours of St. Anthony's, the way I used to give tours of St. Peter's in Rome, I'd ask why there would be a monstrance over one of the exits, and most people would get it eventually that they were supposed to be going on a Corpus Christi procession with Jesus inside after having received Holy Communion. But on the other side, there was a menorah. And when I would ask why there was a menorah, I'd almost never get the right answer. Some people would say, well, it's supposed to remind us of Christmas because of the association between Hanukkah and Christmas temporally in the calendar, even though the two feasts have nothing to do with each other. Some would claim, well, Jesus was Jewish and was trying to point to Jesus' Judaism, and then never be able to say, well, then why is it over the door? The real reason why there was a menorah over the door is to help us to remember that every time we come to church, we're supposed to be reconsecrated to God. And we're supposed to leave rededicated. Because the menorah, that 8-candle lampstand, was what was created for the annual celebration of Hanukkah, the first celebration of which we have in today's reading from the Book of Maccabees. We see what was necessary for Judas to reconsecrate that temple. First, he needed to clean it up. He needed to fix the gates. He needed to repair all the damage that had come from the vandalism of Antiochus Epiphanes and the abominations that his people had done. So they cleansed it. But then at the end, with great joy and gladness, they rededicated it over 8 days to God. Every time we come to worship God, there's supposed to be this twofold reconsecration in which we allow him to repair was broken, and that we renew ourselves with his help to be fully for his service. We see Jesus carrying out that project in today's gospel. It's an image of Jesus that most Catholics don't ponder enough. If I had the chance for a few nanoseconds to be wearing a white zecchetto, I would do a few things. First, I would write a Eucharistic prayer based on John 17. Can't figure out why one has never been done, since it was the first Eucharistic prayer. But then second, I would write different invocations at the beginning of the Mass for the Kyrie eleison And one of them would be, you drove the money changers from the temple with a whip. Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. I mean, some of the times it's just so soft, what we're saying at the beginning of Mass. We ponder easily Jesus, meek and humble of heart, the one who would never break a bruised reed. But sometimes it is important for us to ponder Jesus' holy anger when he, with a hand that would be gloriously scarred out of love for us, with similar love, put a whip of cords and started going on a rampage in the temple area, overturning tables, making coins roll all over the courtyard of the Gentiles, and driving animals from that place. Why did Jesus do this? St. John will tell us, because it was putting into practice Jesus' zeal for your house will consume me. He was really doing it out of a twofold outrage. The first outrage was because it had become a den of thieves. When people would go up to the temple in order to do a sacrifice, they needed to sacrifice, depending upon how much money they had, either an unblemished lamb or a pair of turtle doves. We see that in the scene of the presentation. If you're traveling, for example, from Nazareth, and it's a 60-mile journey, the odds that if you brought a lamb from your own farm to sacrifice, that it would arrive unblemished was slim, especially when the inspectors were on the take inside the temple and would find blemishes everywhere. So pretty much everybody needed to buy animals there, or turtle doves there. And so they had the market to charge exorbitant prices. When people were wealthy, they can pay $27 for a hot dog, but it really gets the poor. And so the poor were being abused by these greedy people in the house of God. There was a second reason, which was deeper theologically. Jesus was outraged that people's whole relationship with the Lord had become transactional. That if they go on up and they pay these exorbitant prices in order to sacrifice an animal to God, everything would be fine. Whereas Jesus would say so many times elsewhere, I don't need the blood of animals. Sacrifice and oblation, I want not. What I really want is you. I want prayer. I want a sacrifice of yourself. And many people were not doing that. So Jesus, in a holy rage, overturned not only the breaking of the seventh commandment in God's house, but also the false notion of how God needs to be worshipped. And he did it because he really wants us to be consecrated fully to the Lord. And that leads to the second. So after the cleaning of the gates, after the cleansing of the temple, Jesus pronounces, my house shall be a house of prayer. Jesus wants us to be dedicated to the Lord with joy and gladness, to recognize that he comes to abide in us ultimately, and that our whole life is meant to be an existence made prayer. It's not just supposed to be some good works and some prayers whispered to him over the course of the day and then we live like everybody else, but that our entire existence is supposed to be consecrated, cut off from the world in order to be with the Lord. Today, the church celebrates someone who lived this type of life and did so with so much joy and gladness that her house of prayer never stopped singing. She was from a wealthy family, St. Cecilia, and she had been betrothed by her parents to a young nobleman. Valentinus was his name. At the time of their marriage, as Valentinus was preparing to consummate it, Cecilia clued him in to a secret, that she had been already consecrated to the Lord, and that if he would similarly be consecrated and live that marriage chastely, with ch- chaste continence. He would see her angel. He was a good man. He said, okay, started to live that way, saw her angel. Together they started to consecrate themselves to the Lord's service. They lived a domestic church full of prayer that overflowed in deeds of love as they would go on out and care for the bodies of the martyrs during the ferocious anti-Christian persecutions. Eventually her husband, Valentinus, got his brother Tiburtius to help him. And one day they were outed caring for the bodies of the martyrs. So they were sentenced to death. So well did they die that Maximian, their guard, likewise converted and was martyred on the spot. And Cecilia went on out to collect their bodies. She was outed for that spiritual work of mercy and herself sentenced to death. They tried many ways to get her to cower in fear, but she refused. Then they tried to behead her, and it didn't really work. It didn't go through her neck because she was stiff-necked in love of the Lord. But eventually, because of the cut, she died 3 days later. And she was buried in the catacombs that would eventually be named after Pope St. Callistus, right around the corner for the tomb where 17 popes would be interred. In the 800s, her body was moved to the place where she lived in the Trastevere region of Rome, over which the church to St. Cecilia was buried, was erected. And when, in some renovations that were being done by the cardinal titular of that church in the Renaissance, they opened up her tomb, they saw that she was incorrupt. They saw where the attempted decapitation had taken place. And they noticed that in that temple consecrated to the Lord, she was professing an essential truth even in death. Everybody noticed and drew how her fingers were, 3 in 1, pointing outward. God is Trinitarian, because she had experienced in her life the Trinitarian indwelling. Her house was truly a house of prayer with joy and gladness. She had allowed the Lord to cleanse her, and because of her incorporation in the Lord, she now participates in the rededication of the one and eternal temple. In the cleansing of the temple scene in St. John, when people asked Jesus why he was doing this, he said, destroy this temple and in 3 days I will rebuild it. St. John commented that he was speaking about the temple of his body. What the Lord wishes to do with each of us is what he did with St. Cecilia, to incorporate us into that risen and rededicated temple, so that in life and in death, we might be part of that celestial Jerusalem where God is praised and where prayer never ceases. The way we consistently reconsecrate ourselves to the Lord is here at Mass. He does begin with the Kyrie eleison, cleansing us of everything that's unfit for him through the burning power of his mercy. But then he wishes us here to give our own logikē latreia, the only worship that makes sense, as we offer our bodies as a holy and acceptable sacrifice to the Lord. Today, as the Lord gives himself to us and we give ourselves back, he echoes the words from John 17 in that original Eucharistic prayer when he turned to the Father and he said, I consecrate myself for them so that they might be consecrated. Let's let the Lord do that holy work.